Welcome to Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we have in virtual studio William Ruff of Applied Biomedical Technologies Incorporated. William is a hydrothermal physiologist who has developed technology that can help combat many different lung ailments. He tells us about the technology, how he discovered it, and how it can help people. So let's get started and welcome William to the show. Hi, William, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate speaking with you very much.
All right, before we get started and talk about Applied Biomedical Technologies, why don't you tell me a little bit about who you are as an individual?
I'm a 71-year-old hydrothermal physiologist. That's a very unusual term. I'm the only one in the world. I'm self-taught. I have a background in hydrothermal physiology for 35 years. I've studied the specific area. I'm the world's leading expert in the field. I have an undergraduate degree from Marquette University. I spent 4 years at the School of Aerospace Medicine in San Antonio, Texas, in the U.S. Air Force. I was a flight surgeon's assistant in clinical and research ophthalmology, and went on from there. The flight medical field is nothing more than the general practice of medicine, paying particular attention to abnormal atmospheres. So very early on in my healthcare career, I learned to think outside the box when it comes to atmospheres and how we relate to them and how we live within them. We worked with people in the space program, the Submariner program, and we were the final examining board for all flight personnel and all the services. After I graduated from the university, I started back in healthcare in a civilian setting. Wasn't as happy with it as I had been in the service, and eventually went into business, picked up some background in accounting and data processing. And we had a recession back in the 80s, and I left my position, or actually was laid off at American Steel Foundries, on and off for such a long period of time. I started Adox Medical Oxygen, which was a home medical oxygen company, which is where we learned to work with hydrothermal technology. I had a number of friends who were my clients. In fact, most of them became my friends, and they were dying, and there wasn't anything that we seemed able to do at that time. COPD, which is what we were basically treating, asthma, emphysema, chronic bronchitis, pneumonia, pulmonary fibrosis, and the like, were considered incurable and irreversible. We stumbled across a technology at that time, which was hydrothermal technology, and lo and behold, my clients, which were all on their way to death, started reversing and getting better. And many of those people who had been considered terminal cases came back to near normal life. They were able to get out and get away from their oxygen for days and weeks on end. And once we started that and started seeing the response, that's what drove me back into the stacks of the medical libraries to try to explain why that was going on. And that pretty much leads us to where we are now.
So, and just for a time frame reference, about when was that you stumbled upon that?
That was very soon after we started Adox Medical, which was back in 1981. It was probably around 1982 or 83. So it's been a considerable amount of time that we've been studying this, almost 35 years.
Wow. Okay. And then that brings us in the realm of when you started the Applied Biomedical Technology Company?
Yes. So we were so far ahead of our time in the home care field. The government had no idea how to relate to us. They relate to us. They we were putting ourselves out of business, as it were, because all our clients were getting well, and yet the government would not recognize that we were having that kind of success, and they never supported us financially like they did the other companies. So we just decided to, after 10 years of beating our head against the wall, to stop that, and we started again in hydrothermal technology in 1998. That's Applied Biomedical Technologies. It took me a few years after 1998 I was working in hospitals at that time again, and I developed a severe terminal case of sleep apnea myself. I couldn't sleep beyond 2 minutes without waking up. It was a horrible experience, and I knew that if I didn't change things, I was going to expire. I had been on molecular water therapy for close to the 30 years, but my equipment had all run out. It just didn't work anymore.
Okay.
Mechanical devices sooner or later break down. So I had developed a severe case of sleep apnea from my work at the hospital, and had to come up with a way to save my life. And I knew hydrothermal technology was the answer to sleep apnea, but I didn't have anything to use. So I just stumbled across, again, a device that would work for me. I got myself a small room humidifier, and my brother and I had had Christmas dinner from Jewel, and we took an empty turkey gravy cup, which was about a quart size. And I went over to the hardware store and bought a brass fitting and stuck a hose on the end and taped it to my humidifier to see if I could sit back in an easy chair and breathe a warm, humid atmosphere from that humidifier without hurting myself. And lo and behold, I could. So that started me thinking, well, maybe I can make my own machine. And we started increasing the size of the retention area, which is the patentable part of the device. And incidentally, we do have a patent pending on this. We got to the point where I realized I would have to overcome a person's minute volume or their lung capacity in order to breathe everything through this device. So I developed a holding chamber and attached it to the room humidifier, and along with the hose, the length of hose which we were using at the time, which was a 6-foot CPAP hose, I was able to defeat my lung capacity. And all that really means, Mark, is that everything I was breathing was coming through the humidifier. I wasn't in training at the time any room air with it.
Okay.
So I was breathing 100% water saturated gas, which I was able to measure, doing dew points on what was coming out of the device, and slowly started to overcome my sleep apnea. And now I have completely overcome it. So I cured myself.
So is this a device that you're actually sleeping with all night, or you're doing a treatment before bedtime?
It's an interesting question, and it's a little harder to answer than just a simple answer.
Okay.
I have had, as I told you, I've had experience with hydrothermal technology for 35 years. So I was more than sure that I would be able to cure myself with this if I was able to do it. The problem that I have with my current device is that this mouthpiece that I use along with my CPAP hose falls out of my mouth at nighttime. So I take it to bed with me, and I lay myself on a side and hold on to this thing at night under my arm, as it were, to try to keep it in my face. It doesn't last all night. I wish I could do that. That's the ideal circumstance. We're not there yet, and we are developing a device that will do that, but it's a totally different device, totally different model. We also have the patent on that. But yes, the ultimate answer is I would like to be able to take a client, put them on a device that they can sleep with, so that they don't have to mess up their daily routine. Our current device can and will reverse and cure a number of respiratory conditions just by using half-hour treatments 2, 3, or 4 times a day.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it's a scientific marvel, but it is much, much easier to explain than most people realize. It's a very, very simple technology, and it works in a very, very simple way physiologically with the human airway to cause this response.
So not to get overly medically, technical about it, what does it do for your lungs that does create this healing factor?
Okay. I'm glad you asked that, because that's the vital thing in what we want to talk about. There are some very, very basic things in healthcare. You don't have to be a physician. You don't have to have a background in healthcare to understand. The human airway does three things. It heats, hydrates, and filters what we breathe. Now, there's a reason for that. The airway heats, hydrates, and filters because Earth atmosphere quite literally is toxic to us. If we didn't have an airway, we would succumb to these lung conditions very, very rapidly. The airway heats, hydrates, and filters because Earth atmosphere is too cool and too dry. The medical community, in fact, all of us, anybody who is in healthcare, were taught a basic scenario for chronic lung conditions. And it starts with the human airway does three things. And heat, hiding, and filtrating is what it does. Then we're taught COPD begins with a damaged airway. The next thing we were all taught was that the following casualty, or the first casualty of a damaged airway, is what we call our mucociliary escalator, or the ability to bring our mucus up. It's not true. The first casualty of a damaged airway is obviously and inarguably the job the airway does itself. So this is not a condition that is mysterious. If you go to a doctor today and ask them what causes COPD, they say inflammation and bronchospasm. Inflammation is part of the immune inflammatory response. The first question we should ask is response to what? And bronchospasm, what causes the bronchospasm? Pulmonary dehydration. Once we understand that the damaged airway and the heating, hydrating, and filtering is no longer working properly, it defines the cause. Pulmonary dehydration, and that's how we treat it. We treat it with humid, heated atmosphere. Now, it's important that we understand this is what we call molecular water and what you and I call relative humidity. It's humidity that naturally exists in the air. But when we heat and hydrate water or boil it, we create this molecular water or steam. And this molecular water is how your lung has to be treated. We're not meant to breathe particulate like we get with aerosols and these other goofy things that they have us breathe to overcome bronchospasm. So, yeah, it's extremely simple. Now, you didn't have any understand grasping that, did you?
No. I guess it goes back to a lot of things in today's society. We're trying to treat the symptom instead of going back to the basic problem of it all.
You have precisely hit it. That's exactly the problem we've been facing, and that's why we are having the extreme benefit that we're having, because we finally got into the cause, and once we understand it, it's so easy to treat.
Yeah.
Now, why is it reversible, and what makes it reversible? It's already been proved in the medical literature that as we heat and hydrate the airway, if you're short of breath, that alone will overcome that problem. We call that bronchospasm or bronchial constriction. So we get rid of the shortness of breath almost immediately. But when you heat and hydrate for the airway, and that's what our machine really is, I call it an extracorporeal or outside the body human airway. This isn't a lung problem as much as it's an airway problem. Our airway problem is lined with what we call epithelial tissue. It's your lips and that whole way down into your lungs, and of course our GI tract, our eyelids, are all epithelial tissue. And what's unique about epithelial tissue is it's the fastest healing tissue in the body. It regenerates itself at a very, very rapid pace. So what we're doing is taking air, which is a toxic material, or a toxic atmosphere, treating it with the heat and hydrating, which is what the airway does. We cut off heat loss and water loss through respiration, and that takes off the pressure from the epithelium, so the epithelium will start to heal.
Gotcha. So it's actually just kind of relieving its job so it can heal.
Exactly. It's taking the stress off it.
Yeah.
Stress off it.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that drives me crazy as a hydrothermal physiologist, I know that you do, what I was saying. You picked up on it almost immediately. And our clients pick up on it almost immediately. Doctors have difficulty with it because there's several reasons. First of all, we're trained incorrectly, and we have to be retaught.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason is no doctor wants to be the first today at anything. And the reason for that is because we've become such a litigious society.
Mm-hmm.
We sue everybody for everything. Doctors are scared to death.
Yeah.
And if they start doing something that's new and somebody gives them a bad time and they're out there all by themselves, they're stuck legally.
Yeah, there's a ton of truth to that. And not only the litigious nature of it, but I can imagine with what's going on with our government and healthcare that, it's not in their guidelines, so they're not going to accept it. And it doesn't matter how much you can prove it. It's not on the black and white and paper in front of them, so therefore it must not be viable.
Well, that's the problem. You're right. That's the problem with the FDA. However, I have spoken with several people in the FDA, not the top people, but people along the way. And they are like you. Once I provide for them the scenario that we have, I always carry documentation along with me. There are studies proving what we're saying. It's already extant in the medical literature. And that's why we're able to take the stand. I'm actually saying we can reverse and cure COPD. I can go to jail for that if it's not true. The
right.
other side of the coin is I can sit down with people and say, look, I have studies from Harvard University and Case Western University going back almost to the same time we started in the 1980s, showing beyond any shadow of a doubt the temperature and hydration gradient is the key factor in overcoming bronchospasm. The doctors that did that or did those studies did not go beyond that. In other words, once they ended the shortness of breath, they didn't continue treatment, and that would have taught them, and obviously they would have come to the conclusion themselves, once you take the stress off the airway, it starts to heal itself. And that's the reversal factor. And ultimately, it's the reversal factor that stands behind the cure factor. So this little scenario that's very simple for you to see, they will see it too. But the public has to say, hey, we want this. You people need to wake up and start allowing us to have this treatment because it works. And FDA will fall into line simply because they don't want trouble. Nobody wants trouble if they can avoid it.
Right.
And the public definitely has a role to play here.
And I guess the next question for me would be, is it cost prohibitive right now? Or like what... So even if the FDA didn't approve it and someone understood it and you were able to get your point across that it could help them, what is the hesitation behind them doing it? Is it cost? Is it just...
You know, that's a yes and no scenario. Let me tell you exactly what happens. Because I always have trouble asking people to pay for anything. It's just something I have a block against. I'm not a good business person. I want people to get healthy. And I would, ultimate person, I want people to get healthy. And I would ultimately destroy myself if I didn't have somebody to tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, you have to charge these people for this. But it's not expensive. No. It's a relative thing. And let me give you this example. I took a young woman who was in her 30s, who every time she tried to come to see me, would go outside. She'd have a respiratory attack and end up in the ICU. And she would end up in the ICU for a week or two and cost the system hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. And she finally made it in to see me. We put her on the device, and her dad came with her, and she was on it for half an hour, and she looked at him, and she says, you know, she said, I feel so much better. I think I can get up and walk around. Well, she actually got up and started walking around in the office, and she said, my gosh, she says, I'm not having any trouble at all. And the father just looked over at me. He says, I want that. I'm going to buy that right now. How much is it? And I said, I hate to tell you this. And he said, what? I said, it's $525. And he looked at me and he said, do you know how much it costs me for my medication for her on a monthly basis alone? And I said, no. When I was a young man, you could buy one of these, they call them puffers, the things that asthmatic people use to overcome their asthma. And they stick it in their mouth and they squirt it and take a breath, and it supposedly opens their lungs. And it does for a short time. Those things, when I was a kid, cost $25 a shot. Now,
yeah,
they're $125.
Right, and then they expire, I believe, too, so...
Yeah, but I mean, he was spending $1,000 a month, on her puffers alone.
Wow, yeah.
So he said, you think I'm going to balk at $525 for a one-time charge?
Right.
It's just how things get out of perspective. Now, if a person doesn't have $525, it's too much. And the problem is that we don't waste our time with Medicare or with the government, because it would take a long time to get this through. And this is not really a medical device that we're talking about. This is a non-medical device. This actually would fall under personal care and hygiene. It's just a humidifier, after all. So the medical community doesn't know how to handle this, and the government community doesn't know how to handle this. Now, let me give for the people that are out there in the audience, just this little simple bit of advice. The first thing we have to ask anybody before we ever treat them is, can they take a hot shower? And the reason behind that we won't get into right now, because that's medically complicated. But if a person cannot take a hot shower without getting short of breath and being thrown into a respiratory catastrophe, they can't use our technology. Now, it's extremely rare that would happen, but it does happen. So if we used our device on that kind of a person, we would throw them into respiratory distress from which they would have trouble getting out. But if they can take a warm, wet washcloth and breathe through it and not be harmed by it, or if they can take a hot shower without being harmed by it, this technology will work on them. So there are things we have to be careful of. The other side of the coin is, it's a very, very rare neurological circumstance that we're talking about. So nobody should really play around with this until they talk with us about it. But the other side of the coin is, you can go to the store yourself, and by store I mean a drugstore, and get yourself what we call a facial sauna, or go to Amazon and get what we call a personal humidifier. They cost $30, $35. And you can go on those, and if you'll work at it, you can use those for a half an hour, three or four times a day, and do the same thing without spending $500. The difference is that with mine, you can relax in an easy chair and use it, or you can actually take it to bed with you and use it. You can use it while you're lying down, so that it's a lot easier to use. With the facial sauna and the personal humidifier, you have to lean over it. And for a half an hour, that can be very, very, that can be hard to do.
Yeah, and I would have to agree with your patient's father there. $500 in relative terms is not that expensive, even if it wasn't helping you. Think about the money that people spend on silly things every day. So,
well, you're right about that. And one of the things we do, and it's quite, I sort of laugh at it, because we treat people in the early 80s and 90s. The Japanese were spending $20 a breath for oxygen at their oxygen bars in Japan. And the way they did that, they would take just a regular egg that had been cleaned out. They'd take a syringe and inject the egg with oxygen, 100% oxygen. They'd crack the egg on the bar and sniff the eggshell, and that was their dose of oxygen. And those lunatics would pay $20 a breath.
And what were they sold on the bill of goods as far as what it was doing for them?
Oxygen has a dramatic impact on the human physiology. If it's delivered properly, if it's heated and hydrated, and if it isn't 100%, it can be extremely beneficial. There are people today, doctors, who are suggesting that if we were able to breathe oxygen enough, we'd never get sick, and our lifespan and our lifespans would change dramatically.
Wow.
And there's a good evidence to support that. I could go into that for you too, but that's another area, and that goes into astrophysics and all sorts of things. But
yeah,
we'll stay out of that for the time being. But just to say, yes, there are reasons that oxygen is very, very beneficial. But the way it's normally delivered, and this is important for folks to understand, oxygen is a near anhydrous gas. So if you're using oxygen that's 100% source, it's not going to collect moisture, even if you try to moisten it. It won't work. Mm. So oxygen can be toxic from that standpoint, because, again, dehydration is the serious problem when it comes to the airway. So we always cut our oxygen, and we want to use an oxygen source that is between 30% and 40%, remaining, giving you 60 to 70% nitrogen, and nitrogen is nitrogen, and nitrogen is the gas that will hold the moisture, and that's what allows us to do that and cause oxygen to become very, very beneficial.
So the hydrogen is the carrier for the wet.
The nitrogen.
Nitrogen is.
Yeah.
Interesting. So is this, in your opinion, a replacement for the CPAP machine then?
Yes, it is. And the reason is CPAP, that's a very, very interesting scenario, and we can go off in that for a minute. About 12 or 15 years ago, I went to the CPAP people. I used to do sleep studies, incidentally, when I worked at the hospital. And you would not believe the horror that those CPAP machines represented. When they first were in use, they just used dry gas, and the technology that they were using was forcing your airway open for you to breathe at night, That's madness. And knowing what we know now about the airway, not only is it madness, it's extremely dangerous and deleterious. So I went out to talk to the CPAP people about it. And I spoke to the three major manufacturers. They all told me to kiss their rumps and get the hell out of their offices because I was a lunatic and they didn't want to talk to me. And every one of them, I said the same thing. I'm going to come back to see you in 5 years if you do not start hydrating your CPAP machines. And I'm going to own your company and I'm going to own you. They kicked me out and cursed me out. And within 6 months, every one of them had come up with a way to start humidifying their CPAP machines. Mm. They still never got it. They still don't do it to the appropriate degree. But you do not need pressure to open up the airway, and I can explain that physiologically too. It's a very, very simple method if you want. Very simple method if you want me to do that.
Sure.
Okay. What sleep apnea really amounts to? Again, we come back to our mucus and our airway, and this is the key. Mucus has what we call a surface layer. It's called surfactant. And all it means is surface layer. It is a bipolar molecule. And this is not hard to understand. All a bipolar molecule is, it's a molecule that has a positive on one end and a negative on the other. When mucus is properly hydrated, all those positives line your airway. So your airway is maintained, we call it patency, an open airway. Patency is maintained magnetically. All those positives repel each other. Once the mucus starts to dehydrate, those pluses and minuses start to flip. And once you get to a level of dehydration, you have half positives and half negatives, and it pulls itself closed and causes a glue-like condition to exist, which forces you to go, and that's all it is. So if we maintain 100% water saturation in the mucus blanket, we have that magnetic patency controller working for us instead of the gluey substance happening. And you can do this for yourself after you get off the phone with me. Just wet your lips with your own mucus and then start breathing in rapidly over it, going and you'll feel it start to get sticky. I mean, it's something you can prove for yourself very, very easily. Everything we're talking about is so simple. It's been staring us in the face, literally for 5,000 years. But we hadn't picked up on it because we just missed that simple first step.
Yeah, I think sometimes, especially in the medical field, that we overthink things, or the medical community overthinks things and thinks there has to be something more to it. The obvious, it can't be that simple, so we have to look for something else.
That's part of it also. It's our nature as people who are interested in science and are always looking for answers tend to do that. And you're right. That's exactly what's going on.
Yeah. So you've talked about a couple conditions that it can be good for. Are there a list of other conditions that
quite a few.
Okay.
One of the most important things, and let me give you a little background in this. Have you ever heard of what they call a pulmonary function test?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay, anybody who has respiratory problems normally will undergo a pulmonary function test through the respiratory therapy department. And what they do is they have you take 3 or 4 or 5 deep breaths, in and out, in and out, in and out, and then they have you blow into a machine which measures your volume. So they'll sit there, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, and then they go, blow, 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 and make you blow as hard as you can into that machine to get a number. That's your volumetrics.
Okay. Yeah, now that you said that, my son had the beginning of pneumonia years back, and he had to do that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now, there are only two things they're interested in, volumetrics and age. Why is that important? Because it is a known, it is a given that as we age, our airway deteriorates and our ability to do that is diminished. Your son had the same problem, but your son had it as a young person because his airway was damaged and he couldn't blow out as much as a person who didn't have a damaged airway. Was your son premature by any chance?
No.
Okay. This is what kills preemie babies. If you imagine a baby coming out of a mother a month or two early, they're so small. Their airways are just centimeters long. How much heating, hydrating, and filtering is an airway going to do when there's so little of it? So they're confronted with Earth atmosphere as these little teeny infants, and they're not able to handle Earth atmosphere. And that's why they go down so often. Now, they're giving them surfactant in an attempt to help that, but the humidification is the key factor. And they're starting to use humidification in the preemie ICUs now, which is vital, and I'm glad to see it happening. But they still haven't made the connection where they're using it throughout all lung conditions. The second important thing that you mentioned, you just mentioned with your own son, pneumonia is nothing more than the inability of the airway and the lung to move secretions, which is ultimately what happens to these people with pneumonia. If they succumb to it, they drown in their own mucus. Why? Because they can't get it out. Why? Because they normally have a fever, it increases the body temperature, and if you can't move secretions at 98.6 degrees with 100% water sat, you sure as hell can't do it at 100, hell can't do it at 104 degrees. The mucus becomes so tenacious you can't get rid of it. And that's why heating and hydrating is so vital. No person will ever get pneumonia again. No person will ever die of pneumonia again once this technology comes to the fore. It's virtually impossible.
So on the flip side of it, instead of treating the problem after it becomes a problem, is your machine something that could be on the prevention side too? So you do this so often and it prevents all these things from occurring before they actually occur?
Our first two clients that we took, One had been on oxygen for 3 years, 24/7. The other had had MRSA pneumonia for 3 years on and off and couldn't get rid of it. They both went to the same church. Both ladies had their problems solved by the end of the week. They went back to the church on the same day, the following Sunday. They were surrounded when they walked in to the church by the women in the congregation. There was not one question about how did you get rid of your pneumonia, not one question about how did you get off your oxygen. Every woman in that place looked at those two ladies and said, how did you get rid of your wrinkles?
Yeah.
Now, that's why I told you that this device is a personal cosmetic hygiene device. When you cut off water loss through respiration, you do things to the body. We know, for example, that respiration plays a vital role in chemical balance, fluid balance, and temperature control. All three of those have what we call a systemic or body-wide impact. The conditions that this thing will work on are phenomenal, and it'll take the medical community decades of study to understand all the benefits it's going to provide. As I say, no more pneumonia. But when we were in the service, we had an astrophysicist that used to come into the office once a week and give us a little ha-ha, it's the same thing, it happens all the time, and we'd say, yes, doctor, we know what you're saying. He'd come in and tell us, before the flood, people lived to be 1,000 years old. That's what the Bible tells us. And he would do atmospheric studies on the earth going from present day back. Once you get past the flood, Earth atmosphere was 86 degrees Fahrenheit, 100% water saturation. We were protected from the sun's rays by a 200-mile-high cloud. So these people were protected from the radiation of the sun. They breathed 100% water-saturated gas at, they think, 38% oxygen. They never got sick.
Yeah.
They lived 1,000 years. Now, he actually, as an astrophysicist, came up with a workable mathematical equation that explained the loss of longevity, measuring all of the, the prophets, measuring the lives of all the prophets, and the further they get away from the flood, the shorter their lifespan. He was able to come up with a mathematical equation that explained that to a T, and in mathematics today as a functioning, properly applied equation. So we're saying that, yes, there is a potential for prolonging life dramatically with this, particularly if we increase the oxygen saturation level, and we're able to go even further than that atmosphere in that we can cut off water loss and heat loss through respiration. Now, I can go above body temperature. You wouldn't have to drink water again. You'd just breathe it.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting concept. And going back to the two ladies, and they asked about the wrinkles. So it's basically just hydrating every organ in your body, basically? Is that what it comes down to?
That's right, and it's doing it by allowing the body to retain its own moisture.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
It is. The more one studies this technology, and the more one gets into it, you're a thermal physiologist.
Yeah. So you've definitely got the science part of it down and the research part of it down. So on the business side of it, where do you find your biggest struggle or the downfall, why you can't get it to be on a larger scale or a larger scope?
Well, I used to be a fairly wealthy man, and I blew my wealth getting where I am today. I paid for my own studies. I paid for my own literature coming out of the libraries, very expensive. I paid for my own equipment, and I shot my wad, so I don't have extra finance anymore. And what you need now, I need to go to a company and have them make a prototype for me. As I say, I hold the patents. The patents alone cost me about $50,000 or $60,000, went way beyond the norm, because we are so out in left field into engineers and patent people, they're just sitting there scratching their heads saying, wow, what you're doing is like this. And I say, no, it's not like this. This is how it's different. And we have literally spent 3-4 years doing that. We overcome their questions every time, but it takes lots of time and lots of money.
Yeah.
Now and I'm paying for that out of my own pocket still. But when it comes to getting someone, an engineering firm, to make us a device, you're looking at $250,000, minimally, up to maybe 2.5. So we need somebody. I would love to find a businessman who wants to be involved in this and say, look, I'll be your partner. I'll take X percentage of the company to fund your machine. It's nothing for a company today that is a going concern to come up with that kind of money. I could have done it 10 years ago.
So you're saying a prototype needs to be built. So you're not selling the machine now, or you're selling a different version of the machine?
I'm selling different versions of the machine. Okay. I have my two machines that I sell, and I actually work with Purdue University. They're going to help me upgrade those devices at no cost. They've become interested in the program themselves. But there is a third machine, I call it the super machine, the one that will allow you to sleep with it all night long.
Gotcha.
And that'll be more expensive. It'll be more expensive for people to buy. The other side of the coin is once you get that, that will be considered a medical-grade device, and that will be something that Medicare or Medicaid would pay for, and that will change the demographics entirely.
Understand. And that, I'm sure, is why it will cost more money and funding to get that classification as the medical grade?
That's a very interesting and a very important question. All of these devices that I currently make, and even the super machine that I will make, can be made to a medical configuration or to a personal care and hygiene configuration. In other words, even my super machine can be made as a non-medical device. And for a person who wants to become involved in this, that's a giant advantage, because you don't have to involve the FDA.
Right. Wow. It's fascinating stuff.
And I'm glad you found it so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the part that baffles my mind is, you know, you've got this technology and you've actually shared it with people from what you've said, and they still don't want to pursue it or go down that path. That's what baffles my mind. And, you know, even if it helped of 1,000 you presented it to, that's one person more than's being helped right now.
Let me tell you another story. Do we have time?
Sure.
Okay. As I told you, I used to work in a hospital, and most of my time was spent in the emergency room. I worked in cardiology at the time, and I would go down after the respiratory people and the medical people and nursing people had done their jobs, and I'd do EKGs and other cardiac workups. And I would look at these patients. A full 75% of our people coming to the emergency room are there because they're short of breath. That's the primary complaint. And I would look at those people after the respiratory therapist had worked on them, and they'd say, how are you breathing? And they'd sort of, okay. And then I'd say, do you want to try something? And they'd look at me out of the corner of their eye, and they'd say, what? Almost with rage. And I'd say, would you be willing to breathe through a warm well? And they'd say, what for? And I'd say, well, I'd really like you to tell me. Will you try it? And they'd say, yes. I'd heat up a washcloth and let them breathe through it. Their eyes would open wide. They'd look at me. Then they would raise their voice and say, why didn't the doctor tell me this? Because, of course, their breathing would improve immediately. And I'd say, be quiet. First of all, the doctor doesn't know this. And secondly, if you want to get my butt kicked out of the emergency room, kicked out of the hospital, you'll make a scene. So they'd get quiet, and they'd say, what can I do? And I'd say, go to the store. Go to a drugstore and buy yourself a facial sauna and don't ever come back for shortness of breath. And Walgreens had a sale on facial saunas about a year and a half later. And my sister was visiting from Arizona. So I said, come on, we're going to go over to Walgreens. I'm going to buy you a facial sauna. And we bought two. And as we were leaving Walgreens, the manager grabbed me by the arm. He says, "What in the name of God are all you people doing with these facial saunas?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We can't keep them in stock. The entire Porter County system of disbursement can't keep enough facial saunas in our drug stores." And they were going to start making their own. Walgreens was going to make their own because they were selling so many of them. The point being that I was one man working in one emergency room in one hospital telling people who were short of breath how to overcome it. And the word got throughout the county so fast that the public was using this. That's how important and how workable this is.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and I guess that's the whole thing that, you know, it, when something works, why don't the bigger entities latch onto it and try to at least question why it's working and figure it out and then go from there, not just brush it to the side and say whatever.
Eli Lilly almost bit. They didn't. They went with my competitor, and it cost them a small fortune because they went with a humidification group that didn't know how things worked, and they ended up with being charged with using dirty equipment in hospitals. And it was if they'd known what they were doing, I could have prevented the whole darn thing. So Eli Lilly spent maybe millions of dollars trying to do this. They believed in it. They just backed the wrong horse.
Okay, so that was actually a question I was going to ask. Are there competitors to you out there still?
There is one or two, and at some point CPAP's going to start humidifying properly. And I hope at some point people are going to realize you do not have to blow open your airway. I hope they are able to separate themselves from their old system. And if they're going to humidify, which they can do, then let them do that. And they'll benefit that group of people, and I'll take care of the more serious people with my super machines.
Gotcha. Well,
all I'm interested in is getting this problem resolved. It's so easy to fix, and we need to do it. It'll save the country literally billions of dollars in healthcare costs a year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can definitely hear the passion in your voice and you know, what you're doing, and like you said earlier, it's not about the money, it's about helping people and getting through it. So I can definitely hear that in your voice.
Thanks, Mark. I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah. I mean, we're all in it to do what we can in life, and I think money is a side thing. It's not it shouldn't be the driving factor, I guess.
Yes, and you're certainly right about that. The money will take care of itself if you're doing something that's good and righteous.
Right, exactly. All right, well, I think we can wrap up there. I've definitely learned a ton. It's definitely intriguing, and I'm excited. Maybe someone out there will want to team up with you or learn more from you. And see what they can do to help to do their part. So what is the best way for anybody to reach out to you and get in touch with you?
Okay. Now, you do have my phone number, but we have machines set up at Sarah Leap's office in Highland, Indiana. And her phone number is 219-922-3663. And ask to speak with someone about the hydrothermal technology. And she'll set up appointments for me to come in and see folks.
Okay.
Now, her address is 2300 Ramblewood Drive, Suite C, in Highland, Indiana, 46322. She's right over by Myers on Indianapolis Boulevard.
Gotcha. And then, of course, your number is 219-465-2079.
Yes.
And what about a website?
We actually do have one. They're still working on it. It's www.endurasma.com. Endurasma.com.
Okay, great.
Now, can I say one more thing?
Sure, go ahead.
This is for anybody out there who's a potential business person who's looking for a way to improve their business. I'm holding in my hands an article which was financed by the British government. They hired the ex-Goldman Sachs chief economist, and they have come up with a study saying by the year 2050, the world will be spending $100 trillion and losing millions of people, 10 million people a year, to what we call non-responsive pathogens. In other words, once our antibiotics stop working, these pathogens are going to start killing people left and right. People left and right. We already have an arm into that group. We've actually worked with people who have cured AIDS with temperature. We have actually cured some cancers with temperature, and we think we can do better. And these people who have MRSA pneumonia are the type of people. Pneumonia is one of the primary killers in the world. And once you're using hydrothermal technology, it ain't going to happen. So many of these pathogens will respond to the body's natural functioning. If you get these pathogens in your lungs, all you want to do and all you need to do is get them out. And that's what this will do. So you're looking at a potential market of it. If we just got 1% of it, it would be a $1 trillion market. And those are not my figures. Those are figures that came up with the British government, and the actual name of the man who did the study, as most people would think to recognize the name. Let me take a look here. Yeah, Jim O'Neill is the former Goldman Sachs chief economist, and he's the one that worked with the British government to come up with those figures. And he thinks that $100 trillion and 10 million people a year is conservative.
Wow. Wow. Very cool.
The market on this is just huge for anybody that, with a little bit of cash, that wants to get involved. Talk to me.
Excellent, excellent.
And I'm 71 years old. Do it soon.
But you got your machine, so that should have. Prolong the inevitable. Correct.
Well. Technically speaking, you're right, and also the lady that I work with, Sarah Leap, the lady I mentioned, She's a biochemist, certified nutritionist, and I was having health problems, and she took me and took care of my problems. I don't have them anymore because of her. So the whole group that we're working with are super people. We're working on the edges of medicine. They call it alternative medicine, and we just get wonderful results.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you very much for your time today, and I look forward to learning more about it and talking to you later.
Thank you for your interest and your help.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.